Josh Larson here, welcoming you to the Think Christian podcast. We like to say there's no such thing as secular, even in popular culture. And if you've heard that before, no, it doesn't mean you're stuck in a time loop. You're just a regular listener. One of the first questions we asked when we started developing the TC podcast, how long should it be? Time is a precious commodity. It verges on an idol for some of us. We run our lives according to it. We give it to the things, we give it to the people we consider important. But can there be such a thing as too much time? That's one of the driving ideas behind two new movies that have come to streaming, Palm Springs and The Old Guard. One is a sci-fi romantic comedy, the other an existential action flick. Sarah Welch Larson and Joe George are going to help me think about both, including the ways each film sits alongside a Christian understanding of time. And if we don't talk fast enough for you, I guess you can always put us on at 1.5 times speed. Joe George was one of the first enthusiastic voices to sing the praises of The Old Guard, a Netflix action film directed by Gina Prince-Bythewood. The Old Guard stars Charlize Theron as the leader of a small group of immortal warriors who are just worn down from trying to fight various bad guys across the centuries. And they do that right into the present day. The film is set in modern day. So, Joe, was this a project you were aware of ahead of time and sort of anticipating? I know it's based on a graphic novel series by Greg Rucka, or did it come as sort of a pleasant surprise for you as it did for me?
A little bit of both. I knew that the movie was coming out, and I had never read the comics, but I'm a big fan of Greg Rucka's work, especially his Wonder Woman run and his work on 52, which is a great series. So I knew his stuff, and I love Gina Prince-Bythewood's movies, particularly Beyond the Lights, which everybody loves. And so, yeah, I knew of it, and I had, you know, this will be cool, you know, and of course, Charlize Theron is an action hero, always good.
Yeah.
But it was so much better than I even expected. I went into it watching like, oh, this is going to be good. This is going to be good. And it was one of those, oh, this is really good. Oh, I love this. And then it was one of those where the next day you sit down to write your review and I'm like, I'm gushing over this movie. I can't believe it. So yeah, I still really love it.
Good. Yeah, it sometimes works that way, doesn't it? You have a sense of your initial reaction, of course, but then as you start writing about something or thinking about it more, you do realize how much you actually do like something. And maybe some of that is, you know, Prince-Bythewood, you mentioned Beyond the Lights, Love and Basketball also, you know, another big film of hers hasn't really worked very much in the action vein. Love and Basketball has an athletic element, obviously, but maybe for me, that was part of the surprise too, because I do think the more intimate hand-to-hand combat fight scenes here particularly are really well handled. So that was part of the thrill for me with The Old Guard as well. Now, you wrote about it for Think Christian as well, Joe. There's a post up on the site right now, and there you consider The Old Guard alongside Galatians 6. Maybe give us just a little sense of what you were going for there, or the connection that you saw with that passage.
So one of the things that really stood out with me with the movie, and it's kind of its major theme, is how tired Andy, Charlize Theron's character, is, that she's lived forever and she just wants to die. And we know that at some point these characters will lose the ability to heal their wounds and will die. And she's been around the longest, she's done. And there's a sort of resentment almost that she has to still being alive and still needing to do good. You know, right at the start of the movie, she's recruited, her and her team are recruited to rescue these women from child traffickers. And she knows it's the right thing to do. She knows that only they can do it. And she resents that. And as I'm watching that, that just really resonated for me beyond what you see in most action movies, that that's such a true character moment. And I related it to kind of the way that we all feel, I think, a little bit right now, especially as Christians, that it feels like the good work that we do, it comes to naught, that we just don't see the fruit of it. And that's what Galatians 6 is about, where Paul's saying, don't grow weary with this. You know, have faith that even if you do not see the fruit, it's going to bear fruit. And our job as Christians is not to worry about the ends so much as we are to be faithful to the means. And the movie just kind of tied that together.
Yeah. And that is a point of emphasis, a distinction, I would say, of this movie, too, is how much time it does spend on the character's weariness. There are a lot of sad conversations among these characters for an action movie. And it does come down to just not seeming or feeling as if they've made any progress across the centuries. It's just this ever-flowing tide of evil that they're combating against. And, you know, we won't give too much away except to say there's a bit of a trajectory where Andy eventually gets some sense of the goodness that has come that she just hasn't been aware of their actions. And it's happened over longer expanses of time, too. And that kind of reminded me that, you know, there's this biblical idea. I think particularly there's biblical evidence in the Old Testament stories that God's plan is always greater than ours. And what's at work, we may not even be able to see in our lifetime. And in the case of the old guard, maybe Andy feels like she hasn't seen it over the course of several lifetimes that she's lived, because God's plan is just beyond our understanding. And there's a time element, of course, to this. I think of Ecclesiastes 3, he has made everything beautiful in its time. And so in the old guard, it takes this millennia-wide view for us as viewers to get a sense of the good that came from Andy and her team's actions. And that also made me think, you know, C.S. Lewis had a great way of putting things in perspective. And when he wrote about time in Mere Christianity, it really helped me orient myself around the distinction between our sense of time and God's sense of time. I wanted to read a passage from that. This is C.S. Lewis. Almost certainly God is not in time. His life does not consist of moments following one another. If a million people are praying to him at 10:30 tonight, he need not listen to them all in that one little snippet, which we call 10:30. 10:30 and every other moment from the beginning of the world is always the present for him. If you like to put it that way, he has all eternity in which to listen to the split second of prayer put up by a pilot as his plane crashes in flames. With that in mind, one thing the old guard made me realize is how us as humans, and maybe even immortal humans to a degree, like these characters, they're not capable of bearing that sense of time, of carrying that understanding of time that we see God has. And for me, at least, seeing them grow weary from it in the way you described, it was kind of a humbling experience to kind of like think about what would that feel like. And that's what a lot of superhero stories are. Like, ask us to consider, what does it mean to have a certain power or ability? Here, you know, their immortality, it almost felt like a curse, didn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Especially we see that with Niall, Kiki Layne's character, who is the new recruit whose powers sort of manifest earlier on, that she has to give up her old life to enter into this new one, right? And Andy's initially sort of grizzled and flippant about it, that you're not this person anymore. And there is, with our call and with the character, this sort of transformation that needs to happen. You know, it's that, it's kind of what Jesus is getting at when he's saying, whoever doesn't hate their mother and father can't follow me. You know, that same sort of idea that in order to have the sort of eternal view, we can't be living in the short term. And obviously Jesus isn't saying we need to hate our parents, but rather the perspective is kind of on this longer view, that the things that we do have to have resonance beyond the here and now. And it is humbling, but it's also refreshing to see that sort of feeling portrayed, especially in a piece of action pop culture, that sort of resonance of, yeah, I get that feeling. I know what that's like to be tired in that way, or to have to abandon your life or what you wanted for your life because of the way that God's interceding in it.
Yeah, we have to give up our sense of control over time, which we don't really have at all, but we're always trying to control it, right?
Of course, yeah.
And to warp it to how we want things to go. And this movie is wearying when you see the exhaustion that comes with that, but it's also freeing in the way you're talking about, to let that go a little bit. So those two characters, Andy, played by Charlize Theron, and Niles, played by Kiki Layne, they probably have, I think, the best fight scene in the film.
Oh,
it's when Niles is, she doesn't want to join the team, as you said. And so Andy is trying to like really show her the reality she's facing. And so they get into this fight. It's on a cargo plane.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're getting thrown about as they're involved in this really, again, intimate fist fight. That was maybe the action highlight for me. Did you have a favorite scene that kind of just showcased this as an action film?
I mean, it was that one is definitely the first standout where I'm giggling out loud as I'm watching it at all of the craziness. I mean, them jumping around, there's a really cool uncut scene of Andy taking the gun. Well, Andy pulls out a gun, Niall takes it from her, she takes it back from Niall, just, and it's all uncut, these really fast motions where you can tell it's actually the actors. So cool. I don't want to give away too much, but the way that Andy takes care of the final villain is pretty cool too. But I don't want to spoil that. Because
How did the final villain work for you? This kind of, I guess he's sort of modeled on Mark Zuckerberg in a way, but he also is the CEO of a pharma company. You know, every superhero movie, which this is sort of, needs a good villain. Did this villain work for you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, first of all, nothing's worse than the Jesse Eisenberg Lex Luthor in Batman versus Superman. So we're not even that level. And to be honest, the past few years have stretched my ability to believe in over-the-top realistic villains, because the real world has provided us with some pretty nasty, unbelievable people that... No, that totally worked for me.
This is true. He's played, actually, by Harry Melling, who is from the Harry Potter film.
Yep.
So doing something very, very different here, I think. But he was pretty entertaining. I think if anything held me back about the Old Guard, it was maybe those fist fight action scenes were great. The gunplay, speaking of wearying, got a little John Wick to me. And I am a John Wick fan because at their best, those films make gunfighting intimate as well. And you kind of feel each bullet. But there are also scenes where the bullets are just spraying, you know, endlessly, and then you just kind of get worn down by it. I do think the Old Guard has a little bit of that, but then those other action scenes work better for me.
Yeah, definitely. And the drama was just a cut above anything that you see in most action movies like that. I mean, the drama in John Wick is silly, whereas the drama here really is genuine pathos that totally worked. And I like John Wick movies, but...
I see what you mean. It feels a little more down to earth. And,
yeah. Well, yeah, I believe it. As opposed to, we don't know this guy's wife or dog for that matter. Anyway.
Gotcha. Well, thank you, Joe, for breaking down the Old Guard. And listeners, if you want to check out his piece that is at the website, that's thinkchristian.net, go ahead and check that out. Joe, we will talk to you again soon.
All right. Thanks so much, Josh.
Songs can be like time machines, can't they? That was the Chambers Brothers, a fantastically complicated psychedelic soul group that started out in the gospel world but wound up changing everything with their boldly experimental sound. They fully embraced the heady, questioning spirit of the 60s and framed their own contributions, including that groundbreaking hit, Time Has Come Today, which peaked at number 11 on the Billboard chart in 1968 and would wind up as one of the most influential songs of the psychedelic rock era with deeply biblical spirit. I stumbled upon that song when I was about 9 or 10 years old and was absolutely obsessed with it. It was already an oldie by then, but it sounded, well, timeless. Shortly after I became obsessed with the original, I started hearing rock bands like the Ramones, Joan Jett, and much later the Smashing Pumpkins cover the song. This mostly African-American group of gospel-soaked soul singers had offered up an altar call of a song that was so absolutely timeless, it will continue to challenge people generation after generation. And it's a song all about time. How perfectly ecclesiastical. Hello, John Thompson here, in-house DJ for the Think Christian podcast, with yet another specially curated Spotify mix, all gathered around the theme of time. How we try to stop it or speed it up, how we seem to have too much or too little of it on our hands. Artists have been wrestling with Father Time since way back when, so this is a pretty diverse conversation, actually, and a lot of fun. From brand new tracks by The Pretenders, The Suffers, Billie Eilish, War and Treaty, and a real gem by Peter Hemmelman that contemplates how summer summers seemed so much longer when we were kids than they do now, to deep cuts by Wilson Pickett, Kendrick Lamar, Imagine Dragons, Harry Styles, NF Zeppelin, Solange, and the Dave Matthews Band, who you will hear a special Live from Wrigley Field track from a little bit later in the show. This is a list I have played several times on my own, and I keep coming back to. It's fun to hear a young Mick Jagger, for instance, sing Time Is On My Side. I wonder how he feels singing that song some 50 years later. To listen along, just search for the Think Christian profile on Spotify and play it. This episode's playlist will be called The Latest Episode for a while and listed as its own mix separately forevermore. And you can hear all of the mixes I have curated for the podcast there, either individually or gathered together in the archive list as well. You can also find the links in the emails you get from us or at thinkchristian.net. And of course, if you think of any other great time-themed tunes, tweet at me at John J. Thompson and I might add them into the mix. That's it for now. Until next time, this is John J. Thompson hoping and believing that there will be a next time. You'll hear from me then.
Sarah Welch Larson is here to talk Palm Springs, the streaming movie starring Andy Samberg as a goofball who gets stuck Groundhog Day style, repeating the same day over and over again. Sarah, a somewhat silly question I have for you first. You are in a time loop. Which comedian do you choose to be stuck with? You're going to go with Samberg, Adam Sandler, or Kristen Wiig? Those are your options. I'm limiting you to those.
Oh, man, Kristen Wiig. But I mean, the first person who came to mind was John Mulaney. So I'm going to cheat and say John Mulaney.
Oh, good. I wouldn't have thrown that in because that's just too easy. Like, he just seems too nice. Is that where you're going?
That's part of it, I think. And then I just also have a bit of a soft spot for him. I actually saw him on my birthday a few years ago. So that's just one of those things where, like, I think that was a good time. I would like to repeat that again and again
over
and again.
And over and over. Yeah, I'm going to stick to the rules, Sarah. I'm not going to cheat. And probably my favorite performer of those three is Sandler, but there's just way too much anger there to be stuck with that guy. So
for
Kristen
sure.
Wiig, I think she'd probably be the most entertaining, but she's so weird, it could get a little out there after a while. I think Samberg is just kind of like, it's that laid-back element to him, which I think Palm Springs touches on, right? Where you could kind of get into a groove with him. So I might have to go with Samberg myself. I'm a fan of Hot Rod. I'm a fan of Popstar. Those are his previous films. This, though, Palm Springs, strikes me as maybe a different register for him. It's still goofy, but there are some real ideas behind it, too. And I know that's what we want to dig into. But I also wanted to ask you about Samberg's co-star, Kristen Milioti. She plays Sarah, the sister of the bride, at this wedding day that Niles, that's Samberg's character, gets stuck repeating. She just wowed me, and I was unfamiliar with her. Had you seen her in anything before Palm Springs, Sarah? And what'd you make of her performance?
I don't think I had, and I loved it. I think she brought the right level of, like, prickliness and vulnerability to this particular role, which is a really hard, I don't want to say too much, but the things that she does with her performance, repeating this day over and over again and still growing through it, I guess we can say that because it is a Groundhog Day type story.
Sure.
I think it just struck me as, yes, this is a very believable character and a beautiful performance of a very believable character in a lot of ways that still surprised me, even though by the time we got about halfway through the movie, I understood what she was going to do just because that character was so well developed.
Yeah, you're right there. She brings a level of realism to what is, you know, a sci-fi concept. But she's also very funny. She plays off Samberg so well, but not really by mimicking his. The chemistry is so good, both the comic and the romantic eventually. And she brings a different register to it than Samberg has. So there's a little clash there that's good. Yeah, they were great together. So that was maybe my favorite thing about the movie, to be honest with you. But let's get down to the business of it. Let's talk about the theology of Palm Springs. This is a movie that, yes, sci-fi, romantic comedy, but it asks a lot of existential questions about time, about our place within and without time. I think of the moment Niles tells Sarah, this is early on, where he says, quote, your best bet is to learn how to suffer existence. And she's talking about the time loop, but this is obviously a parallel for our normal lives. So there's all that. I think Palm Springs could also be seen as a vision of purgatory, definitely could be read as a parable of sanctification. I'm curious what stood out to you. How did this strike you, not just as a doofy romantic comedy, but, you know, a work that's kind of flirting with religious philosophy a little bit?
Actually, you know, I'm going to push back a little bit on the doofy word because I genuinely thought this was a really deep movie. Like, okay. Even though there's some slapstick in there, yeah. But I don't know. I just, maybe it is my sense of like millennial slight irony and nihilism a little bit. This struck a nerve that hit me really deep in ways that I did not expect it to. And I think it's specifically because of both characters' kind of approaches towards the time that they have. I think Sandberg has reached this level of acceptance long before Sarah has. But the way that the movie presents both of their views is one where the movie doesn't necessarily endorse either one, I think. Both of them kind of learn and grow throughout the time that they spend together repeating themselves. And I think that the point of the movie almost felt like the time loop was a setting, and then the point itself was about the negotiations that you have to go through when you're in relationship with other people. And that struck me probably pretty hard because we're in self-isolation and I'm currently self-isolating with my husband mm-hmm. and have been for 4 months. And it's one of those things where this relationship looks absolutely nothing like mine, but it felt like how I have felt on my worst days. Like it speaks truth in a way that I didn't really expect it to.
Yeah, I think there's definitely an added resonance for those of us who have, you know, fairly seriously quarantined. And there is a repetition to the days, right? There's a familiarity to them. In some ways, there aren't a lot of surprises. We can start to predict what each day is going to be like, you know, because we're not necessarily out there where there's a little bit of chaos thrown into our lives. So yeah, I could feel that too. And you mentioned relationship. I think that is, you know, the heart of this movie for me too, Sarah, is Niles finds meaning in relationship. Eventually, and we're going to try to avoid spoilers as much as we can. Maybe I can just say relationship isn't necessarily the way out of the time loop. There are some theological implications to how they find their way out. Let's just say that, and we'll leave that be. But I do think relationship is the way Niles finds meaning in the time he's given. And that's mm-hmm. by cultivating a rich connection with Sarah. And Christianity emphasizes something similar. You know, we can't win our time on earth by our accomplishments, which is something that I think Niles discovers. We can't earn our way out of this time into heaven. So the question kind of becomes, what do we do with our time? It's not like, what did we accomplish with our time? What did we do with our time in relation to other people? Did we relate to them justly? Did we show love, compassion, mercy? Basically, did we love our neighbor as ourselves in the time we've been given? Now, Palm Springs puts a romantic spin on this, and I honestly think that was fine with me, but the movie probably could have worked just as well as a platonic relationship, because I think it's just a good example of how true connection and care between people is of greater importance than what we accomplished in the time we've been given. And, you know, I even think the movie's defining image, which for me is the two of them floating in the pool. There are a couple overhead shots of that. And it's just this like peaceful image that we're given. I think it's meant to symbolize that they've given up on getting out and they're just wasting their time away. But for me, I saw it as this beautiful image of contentment and being in mm-hmm. perfect relationship. And in that way, it's a vision of heaven. You know, heaven's ultimately about a restored relationship with God. So contentment of a cosmic kind, which personally I hope involves floating in a pool. I don't know if you see that. Looking forward, Sarah.
I actually think not just contentment too, but a contentment that isn't really taking ownership of that time. I think the key for me here is that neither of them have any control over the time that they have. Like they don't own it. They can't do anything to change how they exist in it physically, but they can change their attitudes towards the time that they have been given and that they're not even allowed to give away. So I think that the image of both of them floating in the pool, it isn't just contentment, but it's contentment without any sort of ownership. Which I find kind of interesting because I feel like so often my own approach towards time is like, how much of it do I have in order to do a ton of other things? But I don't own that. It's not for me to own it or to control it or to change the length of anything. Like I don't have that power. So what I do have is I have stewardship over the time that I've been given, right? And I mean, it's not really a perfect analogy, but no analogy really is. But I think that it kind of gets at that idea of stewardship as opposed to possession in yeah. some really interesting ways.
Yeah, I like that because it reframes time as a gift, you know, something for us to steward, not to waste. or to try to take control of, as you're saying. So I mentioned Groundhog Day at the top, obviously a precursor to this movie, a huge influence. There are a couple of nods to it. They're not, you know, pretending like they're doing anything new here, really, with Palm Springs. But it means we're going to inevitably compare the two. How does that sit with you?
So this is probably heretical. I kind of think Groundhog Day is a little bit overrated.
Be careful. Careful
oh,
here.
Yeah. My birthday is February 2nd, so I feel like I've earned the right to dislike Groundhog Day, at least on a little bit of a level there. Maybe it might be a bit of a generational gap thing, possibly, because I feel like a lot of people my age seemed to prefer Palm Springs, at least coming out of it. Maybe that's recency bias. I don't know. But it feels like a much more millennial approach to the problem of being stuck in a time loop. I don't know.
What's the distinction there?
The irony, I think, like the ironic nihilism or maybe the nihilistic irony. I'm not entirely sure which direction that actually goes.
Okay.
Groundhog Day feels slightly more one-sided, and I think Palm Springs feels a little bit more like a dialogue. Like Groundhog Day, you have Phil, and then Palm Springs, you have both Niles and Sarah. And I think I liked that because I like stories where two distinctive characters are just thrown into a room and allowed to bounce off each other, and that's essentially what this is.
Yeah, that's fair. It's definitely Bill Murray's story in Groundhog Day, and there is a relationship at play. Andy McDowell's character, Rita, I believe, and I can see that distinction, and whereas the chemistry between Sandberg and Milioti here is a strength of Palm Springs, I don't think that relationship, even though it is a crucial part of Groundhog Day between Murray and Andy McDowell, is necessarily a strength of that film. I do think Groundhog Day, I have to come to its defense a little bit. I think it's also very interesting. There are a lot of different philosophies at play there, and it's not strictly, you know, a one-to-one Christian allegory in any way. But there is a way that as Phil comes around to selflessness, he reaches a level of contentment or a level of peace, let's say.
Or Nirvana.
And so I think that is to its credit in terms of it's not that he necessarily earns his way out of his predicament by accomplishing something. It's more about realizing something that is connected to relating to other people. So I do like that about Groundhog Day, this emphasis on selflessness, which really is kind of what breaks the cycle for him in Groundhog Day. So yeah, but you're right, might be a generational thing too. That's a beloved film of mine that has been a favorite for a long, long time. And I like being able to hold the two up against each other. I think they play off each other really well. And I also think that, you know, Palm Springs again is respectful of the way it's riffing off of Groundhog Day. And I think that's to its credit too. So there may be a ton of other things we want to get to. If there's something else you want to touch on, go ahead and do that. But then we have to spend 30 seconds on the dinosaurs because I'm still confused by the dinosaurs. So anything else you want to get to, or should we just go right to them?
I don't know. I think it's interesting because I think the dinosaurs almost didn't matter to me. It felt like it was a moment of transcendence for these two characters. And I wasn't really privy to that because I wasn't stuck in the loop with them, even though I'd been watching them stuck in the loop. So I could take or leave the dinosaurs, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. And just for those who haven't seen it, again, this isn't a huge spoiler, but at the end of one of their days, a particularly druggy day, we should say, so this could be a hallucination, they see across the horizon some dinosaurs walking by. And yeah, I'm totally fine if it's just like an impulsive flourish. I've heard that the screenwriter Andy Sierra has cited Jurassic Park as one of his favorite movies of all time. So it could just be like, so I'm going to throw in some dinosaurs. But yeah, when they do show up later, when it's not when they're hallucinating, that's when I was like, okay, what's going on here? But there might not be any more to it than that. So we'll leave the dinosaurs be and just enjoy them as something goofy. Another one of the goofy things the movie throws in. So thanks, Sarah. We do have more Palm Springs coverage on the TC website. Abby Olchesi wrote a great essay about its time loop as sort of a metaphor for cycles of sin. So different angle there. If you're intrigued by that, check it out at thinkchristian.net. I'm glad we were able to chat about the movie, Sarah. Take care of yourself, okay?
Thanks, you too. So hot outside, you could fry an egg. Gone. Remember, you were talking.
You're really only supposed to talk about Dave Matthews Band as a guilty pleasure these days. Very guilty pleasure. But I'm going to admit to being all in during the group's heyday. Those were some great live shows, and you just heard a version of Stay, Wasting Time that they performed at Chicago's Wrigley Field in 2010. Now, we've talked about time being something of a burden, even a trap, on this episode, but I think that song captures what Sarah and I also touched on, time as a gift, something to steward, but also, like Niles and Sarah in Palm Springs, it's okay now and then to let the hours roll by. I think Ecclesiastes would lend some support to that. A fair amount of time went into this episode. Thank you to Sarah Welch Larson and Joe George. They're both on Twitter. Sarah is at Dodgy Boffin. Joe is at J.A. George II. And thanks to John J. Thompson for curating another Spotify playlist for this episode. He's on Twitter too, at John J. Thompson. If you want to lobby for your favorite time theme track to be added to the playlist, just let him know there. Of course, we are also on Twitter as well as Facebook. At Think Christian is where you can find us. If you want to email us, we'd love to hear from you. That email address is tcpodcast@thinkchristian.net. The Think Christian Podcast is a production of Reframe Media, a family of programs designed to help you see your whole life reframed by God's gospel story. Visit reframemedia.com for more info. Our audio engineer and post-production supervisor is John Reeder, and Reframe's co-director overseeing content strategy is Robin Basselin. Thanks so much for listening. We're going to get together again soon. The plan right now is to consider the new Muppet series on Disney Plus in light of something I like to call holy nonsense. So join us for that as we consider how another aspect of our pop culture fandom connects with our faith.